Draw closer, my friend. I wish to whisper in your ear. Did you know that the barista at your favorite coffee shop judges you by the speed of your spoon while stirring? And that guy reading a newspaper in the corner, he memorizes your face, folds it into imaginary origami, and places it in his pocket. I once found 3 unopened umbrellas in my fridge. Don't ask why. Just consider checking your fridge tonight. Someone or something might be silently rearranging your groceries.
Moth Hotel.
They say the space elevator to the moon will be operational by 2045, though no one mentions the etiquette of the ride. Imagine, you, a paper cup of coffee, and 2 dozen fellow passengers ascending at walking speed through the atmosphere. You make small talk until the oxygen thins, then retreat into awkward silence. Someone asks if it's normal for the Earth to look that small, that quickly. Someone else hums nervously, like an appliance. After 12 hours, you've all formed a small society. There are rules, rituals, and a shared playlist called Upwards. A poet begins chronicling your ascent, though he keeps rhyming sky with why, and morale dips. By day 2, gravity feels like an urban legend. The windows show blackness studded with polite stars. One passenger swears he sees something outside, a reflection moving on its own. The poet vanishes soon after. His notebook keeps writing. When the doors finally open, the moon greets you with a dead hush. Your coffee has turned to dust. You step out weightless, blinking. You wonder if it's better up here. Fewer rules, less gravity, no email. But you can't help thinking about the return trip, about how long it takes to fall.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Moth Hotel podcast. I shall now read the minutes of the previous meeting. Item 1. The committee debated the ongoing issue of coffee stains on the conference table. It was noted that attempts to remove them had only made them appear larger and more intentional, almost like abstract art mocking us. A motion was made to embrace the stains as permanent members of the management team, but it was tabled pending further discussion. Item 2. The office thermostat continues to malfunction, alternating between Siberia and Sahara Desert midday, without warning. One member suggested we dress in layers at all times and consider issuing personal blankets. Another member suggested just giving everyone ice cream and calling it a day. Item 3. The disappearance of the communal stapler was officially noted. A search yielded only 3 paper clips, a single earring, and a crumpled note reading, "It knows why." The committee agreed to add stapler retrieval to next week's agenda, provided it does not interfere with nap time. Item 4, Zaki Martin confirmed that he has reopened the tin mine in the hotel's grounds. We wished him luck. The meeting was adjourned at 3:14 p.m., though some swear it was earlier. Employee of the week was Björk.
Thank you for calling Moth Hotel Customer Services. Your call is important to us. Here are the answers to your 3 most likely questions. Question 1. Can I check out early? Yes, of course. You may leave whenever you like, though do note that time inside the Moth Hotel does not progress at the same rate as outside. Some guests who checked out early returned home to discover their grandchildren had already sold their houses. Question 2. Why are there no mirrors in the rooms? The mirrors were removed after an incident in which a guest saw themselves still brushing their teeth 30 minutes after they had left the bathroom. We feel this contradicts the principle of guest privacy. If you need to see your own face, please inquire at reception. Question 3. Is breakfast included? Yes, though it is less a meal and more a ceremony. A tray will arrive containing 3 hard-boiled eggs, a small bowl of salt, and a folded note that reads, "We trust you know what to do."
Another new extension was added to Moth Hotel during the night. At dusk, the western wing ended in a damp brick wall. By dawn, a corridor stretched 20 yards further, terminating in a door that seems to invite penetration. The new structure is long and thin, like a finger pointing at something only it can see. Its ceilings are unusually low, 7 feet in the lobby, 5 in the stairwell, 3 in the guest rooms, forcing every visitor to stoop, reconsider their posture, and perhaps become smaller than they'd like to admit. The facade appears unfinished, raw plaster flecked with dark dust, and windows that are not transparent, but gently luminous, like backlit skin. Some swear they can see faint silhouettes moving behind them, though no rooms are accessible from outside. Management insists the extension is intended for overnight guests of uncertain duration. Entry is permitted only if you arrive without luggage, without a clock, and without the ability to name the last bird you saw. Those who qualify will find their key already warm in their hand.
Here is today's horoscope. Your star sign is Aries, your lucky color is furnace ash rose, and your lucky number is 411. You will find yourself staring at an ordinary object today, perhaps a teaspoon, perhaps a lock of hair you don't recall owning, and for a brief moment, it will stare back. Do not be alarmed. This is simply the universe reminding you that possession is mutual. You own the spoon, but the spoon owns you too. Later today, the actress Maureen Lipman will predict what you are going to say before you say it aloud. This is not theft. This is rehearsal. Be generous with your words. They are only renting space in your mouth.
I've been hearing the voices again. Not loud, not intrusive, just there, like a butterfly brushing against the lampshade of my skull. This one has a particular timbre, soft but cracked, as though it's whispering through a mouthful of broken glass that never quite draws blood. Its mood is, apathetic, but not lazy. The way a vulture looks bored while waiting for the right moment, it never shouts, never insists. It comments idly with the patience of a librarian who has already buried most of the books. Last night, it said, "You've been leaving doors open." Too many doors, I asked which doors, and it replied, "Not the ones in your house." This morning, it added, "You keep your keys on the wrong side of the table." The phrasing was deliberate, so casual it felt rehearsed. There's no menace in it, not really. Just a strange courtesy, as though it believes I deserve to be warned, but not saved. The voice doesn't argue. It simply waits for me to notice what I've already overlooked. I think the voice might be Buzz Aldrin.
Hello, who's calling the lobster phone?
Hi, I'm Lily. I'm calling because my neighbor has started renting out his shadow. Not metaphorically, literally. At about 4 p.m., every day, a stranger knocks on his door, hands over a folded wad of cash, and then walks away with the shadow tucked under their arm like a rolled-up yoga mat. When they leave, my neighbor's flat looks wrong, dimmer, as if his walls no longer know where to stand. Last night, he invited me over for tea. Without his shadow, he looked thinner, but not in a physical way. More like he had less weight in the world. He poured the tea, but it didn't steam. I asked him where the shadow goes. He said it was none of my business and shut the blinds. That was yesterday. This morning, I woke up, and my shadow wasn't where I left it. It's always been reliable, stretching across the floor like a dog waiting for me. Today, gone. My shoes squeak louder. My footsteps sound hollow. In the bathroom mirror, I'm faintly transparent, like a bad scan. The sun's out, but I don't feel warmer. And when I passed my neighbor's window just now, I could swear his shadow looked at me.
Ah, welcome to Dinosaur Watch. With me, Michaela Strachan. This week's sighting is of a Dilophosaurus. Yes, the one with the theatrical neck frill, though I regret to report the frill is not decorative at all, but rather a membrane of pallid flesh that trembles like a lampshade in a draft. Witnesses describe it striding elegantly through a retail park at dusk, its talons clicking against the tarmac like stilettos. The Dilophosaurus, contrary to fossil record, has developed a taste for domestic wiring. Entire streetlights have gone dark in its wake, and broadband outages across Swindon have been traced to its peculiar appetite for fiber optic cables, which it slurps with the practiced air of someone enjoying spaghetti in a silent cafe. It is not without interest. It collects shopping trolleys, arranging them with surprising precision in abandoned car parks, always in even-numbered groups. Local residents claim it purrs softly while feeding, something between a vibration and the quiet whine of a tiny electric saw. I love dinosaurs.
In negotiations, timing is everything. That's why professionals rely on Pocket Sand. Close the deal, seal the merger, stun the boardroom. Just reach into your finely tailored suit pocket, grab a handful of pocket sand, and toss it dramatically across the table. Pocket sand creates respect, confusion, and fear in equal measure. Available in desert beige, Sahara tan, and conference room gray. Don't just make an impression, leave one. Pocket sand, because power is best expressed in granules.
Broadsword calling Danny Boy. Broadsword calling Danny Boy. I am being followed by a yellow submarine. Over.
As we embark on season 3 of this podcast, Moth Hotel trading cards are once again available to collect. Card number 324 is the Laundry Room, a cavernous chamber of gleaming copper tubs and humming conveyor belts. The Laundry Room appears ordinary only at first glance. Clothes enter damp, worn, and occasionally tear-stained, yet they emerge folded with geometrical precision and lightly perfumed with scents that seem vaguely familiar, and sometimes vaguely wrong. Guests report shirts muttering faint apologies, trousers whispering regrets, and socks confessing secrets long forgotten. Oddly, items disappear mid-cycle, only to reappear in distant hallways or other floors, though no one has ever observed their journey. Staff insist the machines are entirely ordinary, but guests who linger for more than a few minutes notice the humming forms, subtle patterns that seem almost intentional, a language of machines speaking in vibrations. Collectors prize this card for the faint, musty scent it emits through sleeves, and for the way the illustration subtly shifts over time. Collars fold themselves differently, sleeves curl inward, and the floor seems more worn along one corridor than another. Some claim leaving the card under a pillow produces dreams in which the clothes themselves rearrange memories, folding and unfolding the wearer's past into strange, tangible forms. This card may be swapped for a trouser press or a box of Kleenex tissues.
I'm Melton Thornaby. I now feel sufficiently recovered from my alien abduction to continue with my popular weekly series, Dial M for Merlot. Today's guest wine is Chateau Margaux 1996, a Bordeaux of such stately composure, one feels the need to apologize merely for existing in its presence. On the nose, violet, of course, but not the lively kind. This violet has written letters of complaint to the gardener. Beneath that, a murmur of cedar, graphite, and damp velvet curtains. There's a trace of tobacco pouch left on a bishop's desk, and something faintly mineral like licking the marble steps of an opera house. On the pallet, it enters with ceremony, bowing deeply, before proceeding to rearrange the furniture of one's mouth. Black currant, plum, the faintest echo of mushroom. The fruit feels intelligent as though it's read Henry James. There's earth, yes, but refined earth, soil that has attended finishing school. Mid-palate, truffle, cigar box, and the melancholy of candle smoke, rising after an expensive argument. The tannins are firm but reasonable, like an old headmaster explaining your moral failings. Texture, supple, silken, though the silk has been slightly scorched by expectation. The wine feels patient, even judgmental, as if waiting to see whether you deserve it. The finish goes on indefinitely, looping back on itself like ancestral guilt. Plum, graphite, leather, regret. A wine that does not end, merely recedes. If this bottle were a person, it would be the uncle who owns too many waistcoats and refuses to discuss his first marriage. Magnificent, aloof, faintly supernatural. Chateau Margaux, 1996. Less a drink, more a seance conducted through cut crystal. The dog's bollocks.
Time for Neural Psychology Dumbed Down for You, with me, Angela Lansbury. Today, I'll discuss synaptic pruning. Think of your brain as an overzealous gardener, wielding invisible shears, trimming connections that aren't actively used. Every thought, memory, and skill vies for survival. A forgotten childhood song? Snipped. That anxiety you once nursed in silence. Neurons decide it's unnecessary and quietly cut it away, leaving a faint echo of what once was. But pruning is subtle, relentless, and slightly judgmental. You might feel your mind is orderly, logical even, but beneath the surface, this invisible trimming continues, quietly deciding what you can remember and what must vanish. Friends may notice your forgetfulness. You may notice the small relief of uncluttered cognition. Your sense of self, it turns out, is negotiable, a careful negotiation of which neural branches remain and which are sacrificed. Like a polite but exacting librarian, your brain organizes and discards, never asking permission, never explaining its rationale. Memories are not truly lost. They are just politely removed from your conscious library, waiting, perhaps, for a distant cue to resurface unexpectedly. That is neural psychology. That is your brain's quiet cruelty, its subtle generosity, its insistence on efficiency at the cost of your nostalgia. Does anyone have any drugs?
Here is a list of today's archaeological finds, unearthed in the grounds of the Moth Hotel. A medieval chess piece carved from soap. A cracked mirror that reflects only people from Ipswich. A packet of cheese and onion crisps that expired in 1977, unopened. A pair of cufflinks shaped like tiny fish. Shoelaces with no shoes. Shoes with no shoelaces. A wedding invitation addressed to two Morris dancers. A photograph of the champion jockey Lester Piggott, and a teaspoon that, when used to stir certain liquids, curses quietly to itself.
Ah, little pigs, now every morning I look in the mirror and say, you're not getting older, you're just getting creepier, and it works like a charm.
Drug of the day today is xenofluctramidine, prescribed for intermittent perception of impossible angles. The capsule is translucent turquoise with faint ridges like a tiny topographical map. The leaflet, folded in ways that suggest origami instruction manuals, claims the pill realigns cognitive corners and helps when hallways feel unexpectedly long. Common side effects include a low humming vibration in the jaw when passing streetlights, the uncanny feeling that clouds are slightly observing you, mild but insistent urges to rearrange furniture according to invisible rules, the memory of conversations that never actually occurred, and the occasional taste of iron in rainwater. A temporary inability to trust socks on Mondays may occur. Take twice daily with water, preferably while standing sideways in a doorway. Do not operate washing machines for 3 hours afterward, as the pill may interfere with their natural rhythm.
We've started doing corporate functions and business conferences at Moth Hotel. Today, we have a room full of delegates from the International Association of Fragile Objects. They've been checking in all morning, their suitcases bursting open in the lobby and releasing cascades of porcelain fragments like startled birds. They applauded politely as the shards were swept up. The delegates are networking now, exchanging brittle little business cards that disintegrate after a few seconds. They seem pleased by this impermanence. We've set up the main ballroom with rows of chairs facing a single vase, balanced precariously on a three-legged table on the stage. The jeopardy is extraordinary. The delegates are waiting patiently for the vase to fall off the table and smash. This evening, there's bingo and a disco.
There is a new object in the museum at Moth Hotel. Suspended from the ceiling by three black ribbons is a skeleton, small and delicate, though no one can agree whether it is feline, canine, or something else entirely. Its bones are almost translucent, like polished alabaster and faintly warm to the touch. Viewed from the side, it appears upright, from the front, crouched, ready to spring. Observers swear the skeleton shifts subtly when unobserved, tilting its head as if studying them. One rib is missing, replaced by a shard of mirror that reflects not the room, but something else entirely. A corridor lined with impossibly green light, stretching infinitely. The museum records list its origin as unknown, obtained via negotiation, which is all they know. Attempts to photograph it fail. Cameras click, film remains blank, screens turn black. Occasionally staff find it in unexpected places, the cafe, the stairwell, even outside the museum. But always suspended, never resting on the floor. The air around it smells faintly of iron and something sweeter, like memory or fear. Guards report a constant sensation of being watched while beneath it, though the skeleton has no eyes. No one can say whether it is alive or dead, only that it is present and attentive, patient and waiting. This place gives me the willies.
In order to exit this podcast, you will need to prove that you are not a robot. Please study the following grid and tick every box that contains a 15th century Byzantine triptych. Then drag the jigsaw piece in order to complete this picture of a 1987 Ford Fiesta.
Moth Hotel was written and produced by Brian Luff. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Voice technology by 11 Labs. All celebrity voices were impersonated. Moth Hotel was a Sowerby and Luff production for Studio Senseless.
All complaints, confessions, and contributions should be emailed to mothhotel@studiosenseless.com.